Room Pod, part of the White Dragon Podcast Network. Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'll be your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and star of the show from groomblog.blogspot.com, Miss Barbara Bird.
Hello, groomers. Hi, Susie.
Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the 8th episode of The Groom Pod. I just want to remind everybody to join us on Facebook at The Groom Pod. And I want to let you know also that you can find Barbara at her blog site, www.groomblog.blogspot.com, and the shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz, and our emails, susysusie@thegroompod.com, and Barbara@thegroompod.com. I'd also like to mention that I did get the website migrated. Did you look at the new website?
Uh-oh. Busted. Busted live on air with Susie Scott. No, I knew there was something I meant to do.
Well, everybody go pop over and check out the new website. And on the bottom of the website, on the bottom of the website is our very newest sponsor. Sponsor is Amazon.com.
Yeehaw!
Cool. All right, well, let's start out with the show schedule this week. The first thing coming up, of course, is Groom Expo in Pasadena, and that's February 19th through February 22nd. That's coming up fast. And then after that, we've got Atlanta Pet Fair, March 5th through March 8th. We've got the Northwest Grooming Show, which is in Tacoma, Washington, April 23rd through April 26th. I want to add in, this is out of order, I notice, the All-American Pet Expo in Columbus, Ohio, and that is April 17th through April 19th. And we've got the Pet Boarding and Daycare Expo, May 4th through May 7th. I also want to mention the Wisconsin Association of Professional Pet Stylists having their monthly meetings, and you can find them online. And I want to talk about Olga's classes again, because I didn't do her justice last week. So it's Olga Zablinskaya. Is that right? Do you know how to say her name?
No, I just call her Olga Z.
I'm going to go with that. So Olga Z, but hard to find her on Facebook that way. So she's got a webinar coming up. And it's March 24th at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And it's Asian Styles for Drop-Coated Dogs. It's $55 cool. If you sign up before February 28th and $75 after. And I know you do some webinars as well. These webinars are a pretty cool way to learn, aren't they?
They sure are. And because you can get all of the benefits of continuing education without leaving home. So you don't have to arrange for pet care. You don't have to travel, don't have to get a hotel. Of course, it lacks the excitement of a trade show, but you get to focus on one subject for just a couple of hours and just inhale it deeply and get a good hit of education without a lot of extra expense. I find it's a very affordable way to keep on learning.
Now, Olga mentions that you want to have a pretty good internet connection for this one. Also, she has a workshop at VIP Pet in Alexandria, Virginia, and that's April 27th and 28th, and that's the one we talked about last week, which is show cuts on Bichons and Poodles and also Asian styles. That one is $200 for the hands-on portion for 2 days. Now, there's only 6 spots available for that, so that one's going to fill up fast. If you only want to do 1 day, it's $150. And if you want to observe, It's $120 for the 2 days. There's 10 spots available for that. Oh, and the payment is due by March 30th. So if you were interested in doing that, you're going to have to search Olga's name on the internet. So I'm going to spell it for you. It's ZABELINSKAYA. So go on Facebook, Google her name, and these seminars will pop up for her. So the other big announcement this week for the news is that we have our very first official sponsor, and that is our local company here in Seattle, Amazon.com.
So how does that work, Susie, that they keep the show rolling?
Well, it's kind of cool. On the bottom of that fantastic webpage that you haven't looked at is an Amazon banner. A little click through on the bottom of the page. And if you do any shopping on Amazon, if you go to our website and then click on that little Amazon banner, it will take you right to the Amazon site. And then we get some kickback from your sale. It doesn't add anything to your sale on your end, but it supports the show on our end. So we are.
Oh, so it's not specific ads for like a dress or a bottle of shampoo. It's just a gateway to Amazon, and then anything they're shopping on Amazon, we get a kickback. That is cool.
That is totally cool. And one of the ways you can do it is if you go up and clear your cookies on your browser, clear your cookies, then go into our website, click through to Amazon, and then bookmark it, then we'll always get credit and you don't have to even go back through the website. So that's kind of a cool way to do it. And yeah, it really does help tremendously support the show.
Clear all my cookies though?
Yeah, you don't have to clear all your cookies. You can clear your Amazon cookies if you can find them.
Okay.
Yeah, and then just re-click through either that or just go through the website every time. And we've got a couple other sponsors that are going to be coming on board here in the next few weeks that kind of work the same way. One of them is PetSmart. So if you do any shopping with PetSmart, you can click through the banner and we'll get a little bit of a taste on that as well. It's a really nice way to support the show without us having to grovel or beg for money or, you know, because I am outlaying a little bit of money for this, so it'd be nice to be able to get that back, and then maybe, you know, you never know, maybe we'll be able to travel to some shows and do some meet and greets and all that kind of stuff if we get enough support. So give us a hand, you guys. Click through Amazon on our banner.
So can I talk about my attitude towards PetSmart?
Absolutely.
I've had my business for 38 years, and many years ago, PetSmart hit Tucson, and Tucson was one of the first places where PetSmart opened up because they're headquartered in Phoenix, not too far from here, and oh boy, I had a negative attitude. I mean, they were the big guy competition come to town to wipe out all us little guys, and I wouldn't give them an old shoe. I would not have been seen dead in PetSmart. And you know, it took me a number of years, but I can announce that I'm over it. Yeah, I'm over it. I did stop selling pet food in retail because it just was too hard to compete. Once the healthy food alternatives started hitting the box stores and even the supermarkets, I was out of business because I just couldn't keep the hours and the prices that they could. But I've become a PetSmart shopper. I buy Martha Stewart dresses for my Bichon at PetSmart. I buy my food there. And see, I no longer see PetSmart as the enemy, and that I'm somehow, I mean, and I really did. I identified them as the enemy for years, but I think they run a pretty good operation, and I'm happy to shop there. It's convenient. It's good prices. They have sales from time to time, and I love to just like walk slowly by the grooming window and take a little peek at what's going on. I love to watch other groomers. If I could, I'd take a folding chair and sit outside their window and watch them groom, but I'm sure it would just make them paranoid as all get out. I peeked in the other day and saw a young guy, and I'm always thrilled to see men enter the industry.
Me too.
So I saw a young guy grooming a golden doodle, and he was doing a really good head. And I was reminded right then and there that there are some very good groomers that show up working at PetSmart. So that's my little, but I just wanted to share that although I once viewed that company as an arch enemy, I now don't.
Well, I like them because they have a massive selection of stuff for my rats and for my parrot. You know, and it's not always easy to find that stuff. So I buy my food there as well because I'm in there, and I wish I had a dog I could dress up in a dress, but I don't. Yeah, so, and when courting these advertisers, I was just trying to pick and choose things that I knew that our listeners would potentially use. So that's why I picked PetSmart. And they are very generous in what they offer for their advertising. So I just haven't been able to get the banner up yet because of the of my technical issues yesterday. So yeah, so I'm glad to have PetSmart on board as well. We'll have that banner up too. All right, our first subject we're going to talk about today is hearing loss.
I've got that.
Yep, we work in such a loud environment. Between the barking dogs, the dryer, and then, of course, the music that we're cranking up over the top of all the noise, it is really, really loud in the grooming environment. And if you think you're getting used to it, that is just a red flag that you're developing hearing loss. Working in a noisy environment can cause all kinds of physical and mental issues. Like it'll cause high blood pressure, ulcers, cardiovascular issues, headaches, sleep issues, poor work performance, and this one is a biggie, annoyance and aggression, especially with your coworkers. Yep, even poor work performance or accidents can happen when it's just so noisy that you're distracted by it. So three of the things to know about hearing loss is that it's gradual, it's cumulative, and it is irreversible. It accumulates.
Oh, it's accumulative. I'll say that for you. It's accumulative. So it gets worse and worse as it goes on. It doesn't ever go back. It's irreversible and accumulative. That's probably a better order to put those words, because you don't rest up and regain. Once those cells are dead and you're inside your ear, they're gone. They're gone for good. It's like brain cells. And ear damage does not repair itself. It's irreparable. It's irreversible. That's what makes it accumulative, because it's just gradually gets worse and worse and worse, and you can retire for a year and go back, and you've got the same amount of hearing loss that you had a year ago.
That just makes it so much more important to protect our hearing while we're working. So
yeah, from the get-go.
Repeated exposure over long periods of time to 85 decibels or more causes damage. It doesn't even have to be louder than that. It just has to be being in that environment for a long length of time. 85 decibels, that's just over the average noise of our background dryers, right?
Right, right. 85 decibels isn't very much. You know, I bought a decibel meter when I wrote the article that I think you're partially quoting from. And I was amazed at just how the sound level. I happen to have an uninsulated brick building, concrete block building. So the noise reverberates off those walls a lot. And just the background, just the normal humdrum of a few stuff in the background can be 85 decibels. But it depends on how long your exposure to the sound continuously.
Right, the long-term exposure, that really does some damage. And our HV dryers, those are some of the worst noises possible.
Those are the worst noises. Those things peak out at like 120, 140 and you're exposed to them for longer than 15 minutes at a time. So those are sure ways to create some hearing loss. And, you know, we just don't appreciate it in our culture because our life has become so much more louder. We listen to how loud kids are listening to music these days. We didn't used to crank it up that much. I mean, so much that the bass going by the shop shakes the building, you know? And so, I mean, it's really something. So it's not only the noise from your work at your grooming table, but it's all the other noise in your life. That all adds up too.
Right. And now the kids, they're always walking around with the earphones in, and that's even worse. They crank it up, and then they stick those little tiny earbuds in their ears, and we're going to have a bunch of people who can't hear late. They're all going to act like 50-year-old groomers. So also, when you're using your HV dryer, if you put one of those focusing nozzles on it, then that increases the noise volume as well.
Focusing nozzle, you mean like the cone-shaped ones?
Yeah, the cone-shaped ones, even the square-shaped one makes it a little bit louder than using just the cuff. And then deflecting the air, like putting the nozzle right up next to the dog's skin or across the legs, that makes it...
Across the grooming pole with that smooth metal, and you're waving it back and forth across that pole, and it just goes, eek, eek, eek. That's damaging.
How about drying a dog in the tub? Talk about standing in front of an amplified noise. Whew.
Right, and steel tubs are more so than any other surface.
Right, that's just like an echo chamber. So also, we wonder why the dogs don't necessarily like the dryers as they get older. It's because it is so loud for them. And I remember how grateful I was to find the Happy Hoodies. You sell the Happy Hoodies, right?
I sell the Happy Hoodies, and we use the Happy Hoodies. And you know, can we talk about sound-triggered seizures in dogs?
Yes.
You know, I had, this is very unusual. I mean, maybe once a year I'll have an old dog go absolutely screaming ballistic on the drying table. And it's caused by the noise and the dog's intolerance of that, and it's actually a form of seizure, and sometimes it can escalate into a full-fledged fall down, flop around seizure, but usually it's just screaming and extreme discomfort and maybe pooping and peeing. And you know, yesterday we had two dogs do that.
Wow.
And they were both over 14 years old, and one of them had never, and one of them went off when he was in a enclosed crate just nearby the drying table, and little Jet just started screaming, and I went in there, and we quickly determined that it was a dryer seizure, shut off the dryer, put a Happy Hoodie on him, and calmed him down, and crated him away from the drying table, and didn't use the cone nozzle anymore. And then the next dog was an extremely elderly poodle type, and it went off on the table, and we, you know, Crystal and I recognized it right away and adapted to it right away. But old dogs, you know, like they just can't take it.
I rarely use the focuser nozzles on the old dogs. I just use the drying cuff because I don't have the option of putting them into a passive drying situation. I've always got to be using a more active drying situation in the grooming trailer.
Right.
So
right.
I use the Happy Hoodie. I put a towel down and I wrap their body up in the towel, and I do piece by piece without a focuser or cone nozzle on the end of the dryer. But it's always alarming because they sound so panicked.
And it is. It's an involuntary panic attack reaction. It's just awfully hard to go through. And there again, I think one of the things that's happened is that I moved my my grooming table from the back room near the dryers, and I moved it into the front for my own comfort, and it left the bare wall, the bare concrete block wall there, which I think is reverberating the sound more back there. So we may put up some fabric. And certainly if you're drying dogs in the tub, have a lot of towels, a lot of towels.
Right, they absorb the sound, right?
To absorb the sound as well as the water that you're blowing off the dog. Right. Because when you, because one of the things that happens that we don't realize in the tub is that some of that water that sprays off of the dog is going to bounce off the sides of the tub and back onto the dog. So just use a lot of towels, catch some of that. I usually, when I'm force drying and using a strong blaster nozzle, I'll use a loose towel in my other hand and catch as much of the spray in my hand as I can. And then when I'm doing the legs, I'm putting my hand covered, my towel covered hand in between the legs so that I don't blow from one leg to the other, I don't blow from the inside of one leg to the inside of the other leg. That towel catches a lot. And I'll come away from a drying session with a totally saturated towel just from catching spray.
That's actually a great tip. We'll have to cover that on our drying section.
Yeah, we'll cover that again and again. But meanwhile, towels and fabric do help to absorb some of the sound.
The anti-fatigue mats do as well.
Right.
Sometimes I have to dry the big dogs standing in my bathtub, but my bathtub is rhino-lined, so it's not that noisy. But so I still have them standing on a anti-fatigue mat in the bathtub, so that helps.
A little yoga mat. Yoga mats are a little bit cheaper, and they help too. Any kind of matting and any kind of more spongy, porous substance is going to help cut down the noise.
Do you ever put earplugs, those foam roll-up earplugs in the dog's ears?
No, but I sure do put them in my ears. I try to get employees to put in earplugs. It's so hard to get employees to use earplugs and face masks. And, I grab for those things all the time. And I suffer a lot of hearing loss, probably from my years at the grooming table plus my years as a musician in loud rock bands.
Right.
But the HV dryers actually hurt my ears and make me really uncomfortable. This is one of the reasons why I moved my own grooming station from the back room into into another room so that I don't have to be around that noise quite as much. You got to take care of your ears before you have an ear problem. Before you even know that you have an ear problem, you should just be, there's a, I think it's earplugs.com. You can buy a huge packet of samples of like 25 different kinds of foam ear inserts, and you can find something in there that is your favorite, and they're not costly, but they're going to save your hearing and reduce your stress level. Besides that, earplugs are kind of a cheap legal high. Oh, did I say that? They just give you a little altered experience.
They do. They alter reality.
Just a taste. Not enough to interfere with your work, but just this is different.
So after we did that really cool testing that we did with the decibel meter, I was blown away at the amount of noise that the dogs are hearing right next to their ear. And I was always a big proponent of using ear protection. So I immediately went out and bought a gigantic box of foam earplugs. And it turns out that my ear canals are so tiny, I can't use them. So I started using them in some of the smaller dogs that didn't like the hoodie, would paw at the hoodie and try to pull it off. And they work fairly well as long as I remember to take them back out. But the big caution is you don't ever want a pet to ingest one of those because that would be really, really, really bad. So I'm awfully careful about that. I use very bright colored ones. And I don't do it very often. I just use it on some of those really small little guys who freak out.
I don't see that. I don't see any reason not to. Some people do cotton balls, and there's been studies that have shown that cotton in the ears doesn't do much, doesn't have very much decibel reduction.
Right, it's like 6 to 8 decibels reduction. That's
it's just not nothing. And but the earplugs might be a little bit better, even though it's probably harder to fit them to the dog's ears.
Yeah, they work pretty good. You just roll them up. They don't work for the big dogs because they would just disappear inside. But for the little dogs, they work pretty well. That would be a nice.
We'll have him out in a minute as soon as I dig this earplug out of his ear. Oh, dear. Where did it go?
Oh, my. Boy, I've been calling Fluffy for hours, and she just doesn't seem to hear me. I can't imagine what's going on.
I used to put cotton in the ears at the tub all the time. I was trained that way. And I would forget to take them out. I had a poodle come back in like 6 weeks later with cotton still in his ears. That was such a wake-up call.
I had a lady.
Hasn't been behaving very well lately.
I had a lady call me back and say that her dog just wasn't acting right. And I said, oh my gosh, pull up the ear flap and have a look inside and see if I left the cotton in there. And sure enough, I had left the cotton in there. That was pretty much my last time using cotton.
I stopped. I mean, talk about a little altered experience. The poor dog.
Yeah, no kidding. So in my case, since my ear canals are weird, I can't use earbuds either. I have
headphones?
Gun mufflers. Yeah, I have gun mufflers. Although they're not really gun mufflers, they are radio headphones. So I've got the radio coming through my headphones, and that's how I do my podcasting, is I tune my phone into the radio with a little Memorex FM transmitter. Mm-hmm. And then I can listen to the podcast right while I'm working. And I can still hear the dogs whining, and I can still feel their body tensing, so I don't lose contact with the dog that way. But gee whiz, I can still hear, and I'm really grateful for it. So another thing is that OSHA actually requires employers to provide ear protection. Now, you can't make your employees wear it, but you are required to provide it if your environment is above 85 decibels. So that's another thing to keep in mind. And really, you guys that are employers, encourage your employees to do it by wearing ear protection yourself. Set a good example.
Yes.
Yep.
We invite you to check out the Bee Bird shopping cart at www.shop.beebird.biz. Here we offer selected equipment, tools and products, and Bee Bird educational materials. Now featuring the Handy Bathing Beauty and Australian Pro Magic Concentrate, a magic wand and a bottle. Shop with a groomer. It's good karma.
So let's move on to caring for our shears. You know, we spend a lot of money on our shears, and they are really, next to the clippers, the workhorse of our industry. And yet, in my own personal case, I'm in such a wet environment that it's challenging to keep the rust off my blades. So it's like one of the most important things we can do, and it is one of the least time-consuming things we can do, is just spend a little bit of time taking care of your shears. I know you've got a lot of shear knowledge in you, and I'm grateful because I bought shears from you, and you've actually sent me with my shears a tiny little vial of shear oil. And what I read in the internet is that it's really important not to use clipper oil on your shears. Is that correct?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to say that shear oil is probably a little bit lighter oil on your shears, but I don't think that clipper oil is going to ruin your shears. But shear oil is probably less likely to cause any kind of buildup or contribute to any kind of buildup. It's most important that you do oil your shears. The thing about shear oil is that it usually comes in either a very tiny vial or a needle-pointed vial, which I love. And I use the what is called the oil pens, which is a long, narrow tube with a needle applicator, and I use that for the clippers because I can just put a few drops right along the cutting blade and not worry about having excess oil that's going to gunk up the coat or make a mark on the coat. So I use a lot of this scissor oil, and it's important to keep the blades of your shears oiled if you're in an environment that's conducive to rust. And the my pet peeve, though, biggest pet peeve about scissor care, shear care, is having them just tossed in a drawer.
Oh yeah, that's bad.
It is so bad, and I've been to salons and had groomers. I say, show me your shears, and they open this drawer, and their scissors are just like all banging in together, and that's just like such an abusive environment. That's shear abuse, people. That's just plain shear abuse.
So I've got one of those plastic racks that they used to sell on Pet Edge. I don't know if they still sell them on Pet Edge, and I hang my shears in that. I've also kept them in a coffee mug with rice in the coffee mug so that they were stuck into the rice so that they kept separate and stayed in their place. They recommend keeping them in their case every night. I've never been one to be able to do that. I just can't take, for some reason, pull them all down. But because I have, well, my name is Susie, and I have a shear addiction. So there you go. Now you know. I have probably 16 different pairs of shears in my trailer in another box full at home.
And I could probably outdo you twice. I probably have 60 pairs of shears. Now, I do keep a lot of them in cases. The one leather is a really good holding device for shears because it does keep moisture away from the metal, and it's just a friendly environment for chrome. And so leather, I use a lot of leather cases, but the shears that I'm using the most, I have in a plastic hanging. The idea is to hang the shears, but not, that's the other way. We used to hang our shears by one of the rings on a pegboard.
Right.
And that's also kind of stressful for the shears, and your pivot screw is going to come loose, and your balance of your shears are at risk. And there again, scissors that are hung on a pegboard by their rings can bang against the pegboard and get out of alignment that way. Your shears are a precision balanced tool, and they need to be treated like that. They're not just, I mean, even cheap shears are going to last you ever so much longer if you take good care of them and store them in a way that they don't rust and don't bang together and don't break off the tips and don't get nicked.
So if you have to store them in a drawer, put them on a towel and then cover them with a towel. So at least they're not banging together all on the bottom of the drawer. So they're separated. You lay them down. Don't let them touch. It's important to wipe them down every day. In my case, Randy from Precision Shears told me I needed to wipe my shears down with shear oil to put a little bit of a protective coating because it's so wet in the grooming trailer. So I've been trying to do that. He gave me a ration of poo last year when I brought in my shears and half of them were rusty. So, yeah, I'm not going to bring him my shears that way this year when he comes.
That's
so
good.
They also said to make sure your tension is correct and know what correct tension is. And if you're holding, say you're holding the one of the rings over here, and then you open the other ring up with your other hand and you let it fall, it should fall about halfway. It shouldn't go all the way to close. If it's going all the way to close, it might be a little bit loose for you. And remember to put the oil, a drop of oil, in that pivot point every evening after you're done working.
Right, and the having your shears, some people really like their shears what we call sloppy, which is very loose. And the problem with keeping your shears real loose is that you lose cutting value when you lose the tension between the two blades. So you want to find just the right point where your scissors will on their own fall open about just half the way, or if you let them flop close, that they don't close all the way, just so that you have enough tension to support the cutting value of your scissors.
They also say make sure not to throw them on the ground, which is bad.
Well, sometimes they get kicked on the ground. Yeah. That's just another good reason to have a fatigue matting.
Yep, that makes a big difference. At least when they hit the ground, they bounce. If you do happen to throw your shears on the ground or the dog kicks them on the ground, then don't use them if they're nicked. Because if you're using shears that are nicked, it's going to make it worse and harder for the shear sharpener to straighten them back out. How do you know when your shears need to get sharpened?
Well, I use the tissue test. So I take a single ply. It's the only good, in my opinion, only good use for single ply bathroom tissue. So I use the single ply bathroom tissue, and I take a couple of squares of that and hold it in my left hand and make cuts into it with my scissors and see if the scissors bend or don't cut the tissue. And if they catch the tissue and fold the tissue, they definitely need to be sharpened. And a lot of times you'll either find a point along the blade where they're not going to cut well, or at the tips they won't cut all the way through the tips, and then your tips need to be sharpened. And it's helpful to your sharpener guy if you put a little note on those shears: tips are bad, or has a nick midway, catching midway, or whatever is going on with your scissors. That helps him be more focused in his repair work, so he doesn't have to just grind your whole blade down.
Also, get your shears sharpened a couple times a year, whether they need it or not, just to keep them in maintenance. I tend to do it probably 3 times a year because it's such a bad environment out there where I'm working. Oh, blenders. Can you do the tissue test with blenders?
Yes, you can do the tissue test. You just have to, what's a good idea is to take blenders that you know are good, cut into tissue and see what that's like, and it'll make a clear chomp, and you can see all of the little teeth marks from your blenders, and then there again, when they're dull, they're going to be bending or snagging on the tissue.
Okay, so I bought a big pair of those clunkers. Those are the blenders that have the really thick teeth.
Yeah.
And I had them for about, 3 weeks. And because I was using so much thumb pressure, I messed them up pretty quickly. Is there any keys to using those big chunkers?
Well, chunkers are the most easily dulled scissors, shears in our arsenal. And it's because of their nature. And they are they're subject to either having one or more of the little, because they're actually like 20 little blades in there. And any one of those things can get knocked out of alignment or dulled. And so, and one of the things that most commonly happens is what happened with yours. You were a thumb pusher.
Yep.
Shame on Susie Scott. She's a thumb pusher, people. Yep. We know now. Yep. So that's a common thing where instead of just lifting and closing your thumb, you're pushing against the thumb ring, and that actually forces the blades apart a little bit with every cut. And on those sensitive balanced blenders, it's going to screw up the cutting much faster than on some of our other types of shears. So thumb pushing is a problem with any shears, but all the more so with chunkers. And chunkers are just notorious for going dull quick. So yeah. This is just a reason not to spend a whole lot of money on chunkers.
Good point. And I used them a lot at first, and now I hardly pick them up. I don't know.
Oh, I love my chunkers. I use my chunkers a lot, but I probably get my chunkers sharpened more often than my other shears.
You do a lot more curly coat dogs than I do. I do a lot of drop coat dogs. They don't help me that much on the drop coat dogs. My little blenders do, but the chunkers not so much for me. All right, well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll head on to our At the Table segment, which is Successful D-Matic.
Hey, everyone, it's your good pal Kev from the White Dragon Podcast Network, shamelessly interrupting your enjoyment of this tremendous WDPN podcast you're listening to basically shill to you. Bear with me here, folks. This will be brief. I know what you're all thinking. You're loving the tremendous audio spectacle currently delighting your auditory senses, and you're lamenting the fact that the stars of the WDPN are only around for you 1 hour per week, right? Well, you're wrong. We've got a whole slew of shows that will delight, entertain, and captivate you all week long. And the best part is that we've got something for everyone. Are you looking for something your whole family can enjoy? Well, look no further than Two Men and the Mouse, the flagship show of WDPN focusing on the magic and wonder of Walt Disney World. Pete Mandel and myself share our love of the most magical place on Earth as we count down the latest and greatest news of the week before diving deep into a featured topic. Maybe you're a fan of geek TV and movies. You love the worlds established in shows such as Arrow, Gotham, The Flash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Doctor Who, and so many more. Well, for you, we've got the Geek Watchtower. I'm joined each week by a special guest host as we review the latest installments of our favorite geek-centric media. Sometimes, though, the universe of geek pop culture can be a little too all-consuming and you need to go broad. That's why we've got Bat Squad Radio, hosted by the YouTube comedy trio known as the New Jersey Bat Squad. You'll hear me as Kev L, along with Bat Dave and Spider Denny, detailing the goings-on throughout all of geekdom. Perhaps you're more of a sports entertainment fan. Well, WDPN's got that covered as well. Step inside the world of professional wrestling with Ring Ropes Radio, the all-new pro wrestling podcast of WDPN. Kevin Clark and I present to you all the viewpoints of two 10-plus years veterans of the wrestling business and supplement that with special interviews with the stars of wrestling's past, present, and future. Want more information on where you can find this plethora of internet audio entertainment? Well, head over to Facebook.com/WD Podcast Network and give us a like for all the latest news and new shows and episodes. Okay, I'm all done. I told you it would be quick. Well, this wasn't exactly quick, but whatever. Back to the show. Enjoy it, and thank you for listening to the White Dragon Podcast Network.
Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. All right, thanks for that from our sponsors, and don't forget to go listen to the other shows on the WDPN. They are a great network, and they are really helping the groom pod out. All right, well, let's head on to our next subject, which is dematting successfully. So we all face it, the mats. You know, people say they brushed. We know they try. They don't have the skill, whatever it is. But the dog comes in the front door, and you greet the owner, and you grab Fluffy, and you can just feel that there's a ton of mats in the dog. So that interaction with the client is the important first step of dematting. How do you deal with that?
It's really important to try to catch a matted situation at intake rather than having to go back later and contact the customer, because the key to success is to set the expectations right from the get-go, because successful dematting is going to depend on the extent of the matting, the nature of the coat, and the dog's behavior, as well as what you bring to the table in the way of products, tools, and techniques. So not all dogs are good candidates for dematting, but not all dogs need to be shaved down either. It's important that you not shave down a dog where the customer is expecting a fluffy, full-coated outcome. That if there's an adjustment in expectation, it needs to be done preferably at intake, or you need to call the customer and say, I had to do that yesterday. We had to call our customer. It was a doodle, surprise, surprise. It hadn't been that long since she was bathed, but I think this particular dog has a lousy coat and is going through a change of coat, because she's about 9 or 10 months old now. And And what had happened here is that the owner's daughter had cut out some mats, so there's huge, awful divots in the coat. I mean, she had cut down to a 10-blade length, a big baseball size area, so that dog looked horrible, and we could tell that there was a lot more mats in that coat. So we called the owner, and in this particular case, we elected to clip it down rather than comb it out. But there are some dogs that I do on a regular basis that get matted even though they're well taken care of. Bichon Frise is just mat. That's just a matting breed. It has a coat that tangles easily. There's a lot of porous coat, open cuticle coat that snags on each other's hair, the hair snag, and the coat mats easily. But I have found that if the dog has a tolerance for a little bit of tugging, and I use a good products, especially silicones, and I can work out an awful lot of matting that I would have not known possible before today's products, tools, and techniques.
It's important on intake to be able to judge the difference between a matted coat and a felted coat, because a felted coat just is, that's kind of inhumane to try to get through that. You've got to shave those down. But if there's mats, that's a little bit different. And a lot of my clients, whereas when I started, I would not have attempted to brush them out. Today now, with some techniques and some good products, I can get that coat untangled. The only fear is that the damaged hair will retangle again. So I always try to warn the owner of that. I say, I can detangle it this time, but it's possible if I'm damaging the coat that next time the dog will come back entangled and we may choose to shave it off so that the hair can get a fresh start. So you've got the dog in your hands and you're talking to the owner and you can feel that the dog is matted. So you communicate effectively with the owner that there's the potential of a shave down, but more than likely you're going to try to go ahead and demat that dog. You send the owner on their way. You make sure you've got the phone number. And then before the bath, is there anything you do to prep the dog?
Only if there's serious large areas of mats. If there's serious large areas of mat, I would use a mat splitter and break those up into more thumb size mats. Take a baseball size mat and divide it into sections so that the products, the shampoo and the conditioner, will get through the matted hair and be able to coat the hairs that are within the mat.
One of my favorite tools for that is the letter opener mat splitter. You know, the letter opener that you can get down at...
I agree, and that you can get those very cheap and at Groomers Mall.
Oh, good to know.
And they're good. So, I mean, a regular letter opener, I've used letter openers from the office supply, but the difference between a true letter opener and a letter opener style mat splitter is that there's more distance between the blade and the tooth, the single tooth. And right, that allows you to get it through a little thicker area of matting than a regular letter opener would. So I use those are my favorite splitter tools too, and they're cheap and they're easy to have around.
Hey, I bet you can get those on Amazon.
Hey, I bet you could. I haven't tried. Gonna have to try.
Absolutely. You can go right to the Groom Pod website, scroll down, click on that Amazon banner, find yourself some sheer oil and the neat little pens and some letter opener mat splitters. Sometimes I use that mat splitter that's got all the razor blades in it, but I'm a little bit of afraid of that. I tend to shy away from it and head towards the letter opener one. But the little one with all the razor blades is handy because you can replace those razor blades.
The one that's like this, that has little fingers like?
Yeah, it looks like a comb of razor blades.
Okay, I use the kind that are like, that originally were called the mat breaker, and they're like little curved teeth. And in between them, they have little teeny barb-like things, and those little curved teeth, I use that if there's a large matted area and I'm just gonna go for it,
right?
So at first I would separate it with the mat splitter, and now we're working on the clean dried and matted coat. So I would take the little mat breaker type tool. They used to have a gray handle, and just start picking at that mat. So one of the techniques that I recommend is to pick rather than pull. So if you try to drag a mat tool through a matted area like you would a comb, you're just going to cause a lot of pain and discomfort to the dog and not get very far. But if you just do an in and out picking action, and this is one case where I wish you could see my hand going.
Right.
Just picking at it, and some people call it tapping.
Tap and
so you're
tuck.
You're not really digging into the mat very much. You're just tapping on it and picking on it, and then maybe even with your hands pulling it apart a little bit, tapping into and using those things. And I find that the tools that have the small curved teeth rather than the great long like saw type teeth, I don't ever use those. Those are terrible on the coat. You're for sure going to have new matting after you saw through.
Right. Okay, well, let's back up a little bit. So occasionally before the bath, I'll brush out the ears and the tail if I'm trying to, really keep some length on them. And I'll use one of those detangling gels like the Equus detangling gel, or Chris Christensen has a gel that works pretty good on that. And I'll do that before the bath because sometimes it'll leave the hair a little bit greasy. And then I can really focus on getting it clean before I start the dematting on the rest of the dog. So is there anything special you do in the tub with the dog?
Well, I like to use a final rinse. Here again, I use a Bathing Beauty, so I have the advantage of that technology. And I will do, lately, what we've been doing is a final rinse, maybe even instead of a conditioner, of the Australian Pro Magic Silicone Detangler. And we just use a capful of that in a drawn bath. So that's like a gallon and a half of water, and rinse that through the coat, and that coats each and every hair in the coat and sets it up for be able to blow and brush out. And I have been amazed at what I can brush out, and even how some coats that really look funky to start with, they'll just blow out with that stuff worked into the coat like that. So you dry as you're drying the silicone solution into the coat itself is separating. Now, it might not separate completely, but it's loosening.
When I'm drying, I'll have, because I have one of those dryer arms, I don't have a stand dryer in there, but I'll take either the dryer in the dryer arm, or I'll hold it, and then with my other hand, I'll gently tap and tug, like you were saying, just tap away at some of the dead hair at the ends of the tangles, and see if I can get some of those tangles to release while I'm drying the dog. So, and I too am waving my hand around that you guys can't see. I sometimes forget that this is audio and not video. So, anything you do specially when you're drying the dogs?
I usually don't start to detangle until the coat is dry. And that's because I'm using the silicone and I'm aware that it's going to do the optimum job when it is dried onto the coat. And that takes a real leap of faith. Because I think that there's a tendency to fear drying in the mat. And the old adage that we went by in the dark ages, that mats that were dried into the coat would be tighter and more problematic. This is not true with today's products. So I usually let it get pretty dry, but then I continue to use the air on the hair because I consider air as one of my tools. Because it's lifting the hair, it's allowing you to focus on a particular spot.
You have a better view of it.
It certainly gives you a better view of it, but the action of the warm air, slightly warm air, actually helps to separate hair as well. And this is particularly if you're using a silicone, something like Best Shot, or the Australian Pro Magic silicone rinse, or a spraying on a detangler that's a silicone base. As that air is actually moving the product around the hair and coating each and every hair, you're going to have better and better results at your comb out.
Okay, well, that makes sense. So what kind of comb are you using? Once again, are you using a coarse comb or a fine comb?
I always start with a coarser comb.
Always a good plan.
The fine comb I save for the final finish, if any, on fine coat. But I just find that the coarser comb is going to break apart tangles better than the finer comb. And I use the slicker brush only when I really have some dead hair to remove from the coat. Not so much for the slicker itself breaking the hair apart, with a set exception of, there are dematting slicker brushes like the Le Pooch Red Emergency Brush.
Right, I have
now, that. Which is now available in the active pet variety. And there's also a little brush that I sell in my shopping cart called the Mars Flexi King Brush. And it has a ultra small pad, and it's really good for detangling small areas like behind the ears or armpit, behind the elbow, stuff that you don't want to cut out.
And now might be a good time to mention that you really need to watch the skin and make sure that you're not causing an irritation under there.
Right, especially when you're brushing.
You know,
you're not so likely to cause an abrasion with combs, but you are with slicker brushes, because slicker brushes will poke at the skin and kind of cause a gradual abrasion there if you're digging into the skin. That's another reason to keep a light hand on your brush, even if you're doing a tough job. So instead of applying more pressure, you want to use more lighter, swift picking type strokes.
Kind of like whipping an egg, right? Frothing, kind of a frothing
yeah.
motion.
Yeah, frothing or whipping motion, where you're just in and out of that coat. That, instead of pushing the brush through that.
Dragging
stroke,
so it through. Yeah.
So
you're kind of using the slicker brush as a dividing, as a kind of lifting and dividing, rather than a brushing and dragging. Does that make
sense? Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, I hope we're making sense, y'all.
Well, we'll be including one of Barbara's really good handouts on our blog on the Groom Pod webpage. I'll get that up this afternoon because, yes, I do have to go to work today. Otherwise, if I don't go to work today,
you're
going
to work on Super Bowl Sunday, Susie?
Oh, my gosh, I have to. So last game, you might remember, the Seahawks just tanked for the first three quarters of the game. Well, that's because I was not working. I'm convinced of it. So I'm
it's all on you.
Yes. I'm going to go to a Super Bowl party at a friend's house, and I'm going to work in the morning, and I'm going to stop by in the afternoon to watch the game. And if they start to lose, I'm going to grab his pug, head out to the trailer, and go to work because we're not going to win. Oh, I'm so superstitious that way. It's just silly. All right. I think we've covered the dematting thing. Is there anything you want to add to that? Oh, blending shears. Blenders.
Oh, yeah. Blenders. You can use blending shears. If you are going to cut out a mat, blending shears are the way to go. But you can also use blending shears to kind of chomp up a matted area and allow it to be combed out. As long as you realize that by doing that, you're creating a lot of broken hairs and different lengths of hairs, more so than if you're combing it out. But sometimes in a pinch, the blending shears are just the best way to go.
So I'm going to pop over to the Facebook website, and I'm going to read some of the responses we have on our discussion group. So I posted the question, what are your favorite tips, tools, and techniques for dematting? And Michaela Snyder says, I like to use cowboy magic or baking soda. And we do wet shaves. Do you do any wet shaves?
I do a lot of wet shaves.
I'm still not quite into the wet shaving. Is it? It's a good way to work through these tangled coats?
Well, what it is, it's a way to shave a coat and leave more length.
Okay.
And it's also oftentimes quicker. Quicker for the groomer. Quicker to shave a wet coat than to work a blade through the dry coat. And I can do like this doodle that we did yesterday where we used a four blade. And if I had wet, we ended up using a four and having to go down to a five in some places and even a seven in a couple of places. If I had known ahead of time that I was going to have to clip that dog down, I would have started it with a four wet and very heavily conditioned coat and then been able to maybe even finish it with a three. So, or you can do it with a five blade and finish with a four.
Well, we'll have to cover that one on another day. So Brenda Mendez says, babe, spray with leave-on conditioner, comb through the mats. Some will blow out with the HV. Heavily matted or pelted coats get a wet shave. I have used cornstarch to comb through mats on kitties. Do you ever use cornstarch?
Cornstarch is kind of, been around a long time, and it's good. The reason that it works well on cats is because it absorbs a lot of oil, and cats almost always have a greasier coat and oilier coat than do dogs. And of course, it's very non-toxic.
Michaela adds that I meant cornstarch, not baking powder. I think my brain is baking today.
I'm glad she added that, because baking soda is really rather, well, yeah, it's not, it's, and it's very high in pH.
Okay, so Anna Ray says, I powder the dogs with baby powder, then rub it in and brush with a slicker. It helps the comb and dematting tool glide through. After, I use a shedless conditioner and a towel dry through the remaining tangles while the dog is very wet. It works wonders. Caroline the Grim Groomer, HV dryer for the double-coated and lots of patience. So that's from our groomers around the world. And that just about wraps it up for this week on the Groom Pod. And I just want to remind you one more time that we have the new Amazon banner up on our website, www.thegroompod.com. And if you click through it, you can do any of your shopping. It doesn't add anything to your part, but it does give us a little kickback on the show, and it'll help with our production costs.
If you want to support directly, you can go to the Bee Bird Biz shopping cart and find some of the items we've talked about today right there and put it on money right in my pocket. Yes.
Oh, I like that even better. Make that your first choice, Amazon your second choice, and we will be here next week to talk to all you guys again. So have a great week and talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, stylists, it's time to sweep up the hair, clean out the tub, and turn out the lights on another episode of the Groom Pod. Remember to join the discussion group and be part of the show by liking us on Facebook at the Groom Pod. You can find Barbara online at groomblog.blogspot.com and at her shopping site, www.shop.bbird.biz. You can email me at Susie@thegroompod.com or Barbara@thegroompod.com. Please tell all your friends about the show and leave comments and reviews anywhere that you can. And also, please support the sponsors of the show. They make it possible for us to continue on. So on behalf of Barbara Bird and myself, thanks for listening and see you real soon.
This has been a production of the White Dragon Podcast Network. For information on this, as well as our other great podcasts, check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/WD Podcast Network, email us at WDPodcastNetwork@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at White Dragon PN.